When a young couple goes to a restaurant, they have no idea they're about to get more than they bargained for. And then we travel to the spookiest place on earth, a bedroom. While everyone's trying to sleep and become rejuvenated for the day before, what forces of darkness swirl in your bedroom? Is it possible that waiting there just out of eyesight is a demonic entity waiting to swallow your soul? Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. So first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Justin Seats. Woohoo, yeah, wee! Yeah, he's all running on in. Running on in doing jumping jacks. Woo! Justin Seats. Justin Seats has been getting the word out about the show, telling his friends, telling his family that Dead Rabbit Radio is awesome. And Justin, that is why you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially, do what Justin did. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. Tell everyone you know Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Justin, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the key. I just came up with this. Never thought about this before. Justin, I'm going to go ahead and attach a harness to you, and we're all going to grab onto you. He's like, what, this is getting convoluted. Why can't I just have the Jason Jalopy? You see the keys right over there? I was like, no, this is way better. Everyone grab onto Justin as we inflate the bunny balloons. We're on now. I have to like let go of him and I'm all pumping him up. Takes about an hour or two. 100 bunny balloons. Jason just used the blimp, the bunny blimp. It's the same thing. It's just more dangerous. Everyone grab onto Justin's waist as he himself is the blimp. The bunny balloons lift us up into the sky above Dead Rabbit Radio headquarters. Justin, fly us all the way out to a sushi restaurant. I don't know what sound balloons make. I mean, 100 balloons. It's just the sounds of the sky. Wind blowing by. Plane. I don't know. I probably never use this again. What sound does a balloon? I know what they sound like when they pop. We're going to have to pop a few to lower ourselves down into the sushi restaurant. First off, I got to give a shout out to the last 747. That is someone who's been sending me over a ton of stuff. Really, really appreciate it. And this is one of the stories that 747 sent over. It's 2022. Very, very recent story. It's 2022 and we're in a sushi restaurant. We're sitting there and we're eating all this disgusting garbage. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I lie. And we see, sushi's not that bad. I will say that I've had sushi twice at a sushi restaurant, maybe three times, and then probably about 40 or 50 times over the course of my life, I've had sushi from Safeway. So I'm sure there's probably some world famous sushi chef listening to this episode. He's like, oh, Justin recommended this podcast to me. He's all chopping up fish guts and stuff like that. He's like, oh, this will be a great episode to listen to as I stuff seaweed full of trout gizzard, wrap a little rice in it. And now he's all chopping the radio or however he listens to this podcast. He's chopping his ears. He's like, oh, why did I wear AirPods? Chop, chop, chop. Chop them while they're still in his ear. We're hanging out at the sushi restaurant. I bring my own. I come in with my Safeway sushi. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's just as good. And a couple comes in. We're going to meet a young woman. Let's call her Maggie. She's 30 years old and she's out with her husband. We will call Tim. And they decide to have some late night sushi. This restaurant is almost closed at this point. They're like, you know what I have a hankering for right now? Raw fish wrapped in green stuff. Oh yeah, that sounds delicious to me too. So they get in their car, they drive to the sushi restaurant. And when they get into the sushi restaurant, it's totally empty. There's no customers there. They're about to close. And the server dude walks over. He sees this young couple standing there, and he walks over, and he goes, "Hello, dining in?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure. Sure, we'll sit down and eat some fish guts." And he goes, "Oh, okay. And just the three of you tonight?" And when the server said this, it kind of confused Maggie, because it's just her and Tim, and so she thinks maybe there's someone standing behind them. Because that'll happen from time to time, right? You go into a restaurant and people will, like, there's too many people gathered together and they're like, "Oh, table for 10? And you're like, "No, two tables for 5. Maggie turns around. There's no one standing there. And when she kind of looks back to the server, he's just standing there. Like, he's waiting for an answer. And then he turns and just walks them towards a table. And Maggie thinks it's weird. Tim heard it too. Tim thinks it's weird. And Maggie, who's the one who posted this story, she goes, "For a time, it was kind of like our in joke. Kind of our secret joke, right? Just the three of you tonight?" Big knee slapper there. It was something weird that happened to them they would joke about occasionally. They didn't understand why he said that. There was only two people in that area, other than, you know, the server himself. It was just a weird event. April 2024. 2 years later. Maggie and Tim, they go to a breakfast place. A restaurant they'd been to many times before. The server is coming over with the menus and the silverware, and he walks up to him and he goes, "Just the three of you this morning?" And Maggie felt her stomach just drop. She doesn't understand why anyone would say that. And she said it wasn't that the server said, "Just the three of you this morning," when there's clearly just two of them. She said the way he said it. She said he used the exact same inflection as the server did 2 years ago at the sushi restaurant, which wasn't a forgotten memory. They'd been joking about it on and off since. And now this waiter goes, "Just the three of you this morning?" And she said, not only did this server say it in the same exact way as the sushi guy did, the exact same inflection, she goes, both of them seemed so sure of the question. Both of them never had any doubt that they saw three people there. But in this situation, when he said, "Just the three of you this morning," it's kind of waiting for an answer, and then he puts down two menus and two sets of silverware and leaves. Never acknowledges a mistake, never goes, "Oh, I don't know, sorry, I don't know why I thought there was three of you, there's only two of you." Nothing. He just walks away. Maggie said, this is interesting because this is really interesting, a paranormal story, because this is one where I think the people, the observers of the story are kind of off base. Not like cuckoo, but let's get into it. So she goes, "I have not had any close deaths in my family or in my social life or anyone." She goes, "I haven't had anyone close to me die, related or unrelated." She goes, "My husband recently lost his mother, and then his stepmother, his father, they have passed by at this point. So they're thinking, are we pulling along the ghost of a recently deceased, like, mother, stepmother, something like that?" This is something that is really wrong about the paranormal research community. This was posted on the Ghost subreddit. And they deleted it. The mods, they said, "This isn't for us. This bizarre paranormal story is not for us." And again, this was posted online by someone going by the name Technical Mark 1084. I looked through their posting history. Everything else was normal. So it wasn't like this fraud. It wasn't like someone just trying to gain attention by telling these bizarre stories. Everything else was normal posts about normal things. Ghosts, subreddit. I see this all over the paranormal subreddit. You don't fit our very specific brand of what we're looking for. Therefore, we're going to delete the evidence that you ever posted it. The last 747, he has been copying and pasting these articles. So even if they're deleted, we still have a record of them. And that's why I archive stuff from a lot of websites, because they will be deleted by overzealous mods who go, that's not a ghost story. No one's in a white sheet. Where's Casper? Delete it. There's a couple different ways you could look at this story. One of them is the ghost of a recently deceased one. So they're going to the sushi restaurant and mom is standing behind her son. And the server's like, just the three of you? Two of you, two humans, and whatever in the world that is, that wraith from beyond. Does she need a high chair? I don't know. Does she have legs? Does her body just have a little wavy thing on the bottom? Like a cartoon ghost? I'm actually thinking of something a little sadder. If you can fully, oh, Jason, that's totally out of character for you. Thinking of something far more sad. It's interesting because both servers, it's not like these are the only two restaurants they went to in this time period either. Both servers said it and they didn't correct themselves. It would have been crazy had they set down three menus and three sets of silverware, but just the two. If one server did it, you could just assume that server that server was bad in math, is how you could assume that story. Two servers doing it using the same inflection, you could, I'll be honest, I'm not a huge proponent of this, but I think you could easily say this could be the start of gang stalking, right? Of some sort of psychological warfare on this couple. Gang stalking in its modern, in the modern mythology, in the modern lore, I don't think is as common as people think it is. The police do stalk people and gangs will stalk people, but the government stalking you to specifically drive you crazy, I'm not going to say it's never happened, and I'm not going to say it never does happen, but it doesn't happen so often that you would have the amount of people complaining about it. I don't think it's that. You could argue it's the ghost of one of his dead loved ones just kind of hanging out. The ghost is like in the afterlife being like, ah, yes, I have the heavenly glow on my skin. Everything's perfect. I have a pickleball game with Albert Einstein later, it's going to be great. And then I'm going to play chess against the first chimp we shot into space. But right now, that all happens later. Right now, I want some sushi. And there's my son down there. I'm looking at him through the clouds. I'm going to fly down there. I was thinking this, and this might sound completely horrible and tragic and sad, but what if it's their dead kid? And you go, Jason, they didn't mention they had a kid. Yeah, that's what even makes it more tragic. Because they didn't even know they had a kid who died. It's possible that... Now I state that so clearly, and I was like, how would you? She's like, oh, why am I so fat? Oh, I better go to the doctor. I have the worst tummy ache. And then she gives birth to a kid. She's like, oh, my stomach feels so much. She just walked out of the hospital. She's like, oh, why am I bleeding profusely? Oh, well, that'll fix itself. And then the hospital has this baby in this crib. And they're like, where are the parents at? The mom's just sitting at home. She's like, oh, man, I must have pulled out a giant tumor or something like that. Because look at how flat my belly is now. And no one picks up the baby. It's probably like at an animal shelter, right? If you don't pick the baby up within 14 days, the doctor's like, hey, sorry, buddy. This is not a no-kill hospital. He's like, what? What? Is that a thing? And the doctor's like, well, sorry, kid. It's possible. I mean, that scenario is not possible. But I'm thinking, like, what if it was, like, a tragic miscarriage or something like that? And that's who they're seeing. That's who the server's seeing. Now, again, there's no evidence. You're like, Jason, it's far more likely it's the dude's mom. We actually know she existed. He said, my mom died. You're like, you're such a contrarian. You're like, I don't think it's the mom. I think it's somebody who never existed. Someone who's not in the narrative at all. It must be them. Say I, Jason Carpenter, If possible, unlikely. It could also be... I was even thinking something along the lines of alternate reality. Having it happen once, it would have stayed an in-joke. It never would have been posted online. Having it happen twice, I wonder if there's some sort of mirror reality, some sort of image that's bubbling to the surface. Because what's interesting about it is both times, both waiters responded in the same way, but then they responded in a logical way by just, like, they wait for an answer and nothing comes, and then they put down two menus and two pieces of silverware. And when the guy at the sushi restaurant hears it and he doesn't get an answer, he just takes him to a table and sits down. And he doesn't keep going, should we wait to order until your friend comes back? Until that floating fetus comes back? I don't know. Where's he at? Little baby floating around, dodging the sushi knife. The guy's like, oh, you'll make the most delicious sushi ever. Baby wrapped in seaweed. He's like flying around back, chopping up his umbilical cord. His ghost umbilical cord. Oh, I could stuff this full of rice. He didn't say anything, right? The server didn't go, where's your ghost child? And I even imagine, like, the child was older. This means you're like, Jason, that's made up. You can't keep saying, hey, maybe it's this. Maybe it's this thing that I have no evidence for. You just keep harping on it. And now, you're saying he's not even a ghost baby. The ghost baby that never existed is now an adult man who never existed. Stop it. Both servers reacted and asked that question. Both servers waited for an answer. And it, like, going back to the alternate reality thing, it's almost like everything kind of rubber banded back into our reality. They were seeing an alternate reality where there were three of them. Who knows? This is why it's so ridiculous that the mods of the Ghost subreddit took this down. This is absolutely bizarre. And had the last 747, because I didn't catch this, had the last 47 not copied and pasted it and created a new post for it, this very unique paranormal phenomenon would be lost. Someone would have posted it who's not super into the paranormal world, doesn't go, oh, okay, well, I'll just post it on this other subreddit, or I'll post it on these 10 different subreddits if you're going to take it down from there. They post it. They may not even know it got removed. They just saw one or two comments, responded to them, went on with their day. And if they didn't notice it got removed, they'd be like, well, okay, I guess it was probably nothing. If it's not ghosts, then I'm not going to look in High Strangeness or some other alternate mirror reality subreddit. I think this happens more often than not. I think we lose a lot of this research, these experiences, more often than not. But it's bizarre, and it's one that I don't have an answer for. Sure, I can make up one. But I'm wondering, I am kind of leaning towards ghost as well. But honestly, I'm kind of in between that and... Tim and Maggie might, for whatever reason, have some sort of distorting effect on reality. Like, when they're around, you may see a third there. It could also be demonic. It could be an attachment to them. Although I will say, again, the waiter may go, just you two. And then, if you'd like, I could call an exorcist for that beast from beyond standing behind you. Oh, infernal lord, please give me more sins. Who can guess? Who can guess? I mean, I did, right? Made up a whole story. Possible. Definitely possible. Justin Seats, let's go ahead and unstrap you from those balloons. He was flown around the sushi restaurant that whole time. Justin, let's pop those balloons. I'm going to toss you the keys to the world famous carpenter copter. We are leaving behind this sushi restaurant. Why don't you fly us all the way out to an apartment complex? We're headed all the way out to this apartment complex. We don't know exactly where the story takes place. We do have a year. 2004 is the year. We're about to meet a young girl. Let's call her Abigail, or Abby. She's 4. And at this time in her life, she's living in an apartment with her family. She has a mom, a dad, and a brother. Abigail's doing, I mean, at 4, right, you can talk. I'm pretty sure you can talk, stuff like that, walk around, probably get a job hosting tea parties. Now, Grandma would come over pretty often to see the kids. Abby! Abby's brother, we'll call him Tom. Abby and Tom, come here. Let's go play, Grandma says. And they're like, thanks, Grandma. And they would play outside They'd be running around in the grass. Look at Grandma. Look what I found. It's a flower. Look at this, Grandma. Oh, that's pretty cool. Grandma, Grandma. Tom, you're like, Jason just gets to the stupid story, man. Theater of the mind. You got to be part of it. Tom goes, Grandma, I found something. It's slimy and long. And when I pick it up, it's hard. She's like, what is that? What is that, little boy? And she goes, it's a snail. Look at this. He's picking it up and showing Grandma. Wow, a snail. Tom, that's so fantastic. Catch some lady bees. Catch some lady bees. What's a lady bee? Catch some ladybugs in a jar and make them fight the snail. Who comes out on top, Tom? Survival of the fittest. Who will win? And he's like, what? And so he goes out to find some ladybugs. Abigail said growing up in this apartment complex was kind of weird. Because, you know, you had all these other kids running around. You had these families. But her and her brother were under strict orders to not play with any of the neighborhood kids. Hey, Abby, you want to come play hopscotch with us?
No.
Your loss.
Hey, Abby, you want to go down the slide with us?
Nope. Oh, well.
Hey, Abby. You want to play a little bit of soccer?
Never ever,
Abby said. Abby was unable to play with the neighborhood kids, but her mother and her grandmother were very adamant about one neighbor in particular. There was this old woman who lived nearby, and they said, you don't ever talk to her. Don't even be near her. She's a bad person, Abby. Do not hang out with her. And Abby goes, this one, like, even my mom would not talk to this neighbor. My mom did not like this woman, this old woman at all. So at least that was fair, right? It's not like my mom was out kicking soccer balls against the other kids and going down the slide. She's like, look at me, Abby. I'm an adult and I can do whatever I want. I can even kick kids off slides and take it all to myself. It was weird that there was one adult in particular they had to stay away from. But when she saw that her own mother was kind of put off or maybe even afraid of this other neighbor, it made sense to her. Well, since Abigail is 4, she said that I had my own little bed in my parents' bedroom. So I had this little 4-year-old person bed, and that's where I would sleep, and it was set up in the corner, and I would always get thirsty in the middle of the night. So my mom would set a glass of water on the windowsill. So if I woke up in the middle of the night, I wouldn't go, Mommy, Mommy, I need water. And then she'd have to go with me to the kitchen and give me a glass of water and walk back. I could do it myself. I'm a big girl. I'm 4. Put that window, prepare it for me in advance. But Mom, give me just a glass of water. Set it on the windowsill. Well, on one particular night, Abby woke up from a deep sleep. She's like, oh, man. I'm sure I'm parched. I need something to drink. I need a little something to wet my whistle. And she goes to grab the water. It's late at night. She goes to grab the water and she realizes it's too full. Like if she picks it up, she's going to spill some of it. Maybe all of it. It's going to be a heavy glass. There's too much water in it. So she goes, oh man, I'm so thirsty. My little esophagus is dry. I'm going to go and wake up Mom. Right? This whole thing was to prevent Mom from getting woken up. I'm going to go wake up Mom and have her hand me the glass of water that's on the windowsill and I can drink it up. So she jumps out of her little baby bed and it's dark. It's a bedroom. It's late at night. She's walking across the room to get to where her parents are sleeping. And as she gets closer, she becomes frozen in place. She's with almost, if she was an adult and had longer arms, she would be within arm's reach of the mom. She's a little bit shy of that. And she's frozen in place. She can't move a muscle. The only thing she could do was breathe. But other than that, everything was completely frozen. And that's when she hears something.
She doesn't recognize the sound. She's straining her ears to try to figure out what that sound is. And she hears it again. She doesn't know what it is, but she knows where it's coming from. It's coming from underneath her parents' bed. So her eyes aren't a muscle, right? Isn't it an organ? Her eyes look down to that gap underneath her parents' bed. And she sees a pitch black hand crawling out of the darkness from beneath the bed. It didn't make any noise, but, you know, make it scarier, right? Am I allowed to do that? It's all crawling out. Spooky hand. And the hand was attached to an arm. It wasn't like a hand from the Addams Family. It's attached to an arm, but she said... That makes it, you're like, oh, it's attached to an arm? That's not terrifying. Woo, that was close. I thought it was just a hand. But a hand with an arm, that makes sense. She goes, it was, as it was crawling out from underneath the bed... She realizes that no human's arm is this long. It's just getting longer and longer and longer. It's less of a arm and more of a facsimile of an arm. She tries to scream, but she can't. She can't get out this blood-curdling scream that she wants to give as this arm is growing out of from underneath the bed and it has this black hand and it's crawling towards her and eventually... It gets to Abby. It reaches Abby's feet and it touches her, and she instantly feels her foot start to burn. The hand begins to crawl up her leg, and she said, every second where this thing touched me, it burned. It hurt so bad, and it's growing. The arm's continuing to grow longer and longer. This hand is crawling up her leg. It reaches her pajamas, and it eventually crawls up her body and wraps around her neck. And Abigail is silently praying for all of this to stop. Please let this end. Whatever this is, I want it to go away. She's feeling the pain. She feels the burn. She's in deep fear. She wants to scream, but cannot. This hand continues to wrap its long black fingers around her neck. And then her mom slightly rolls over in bed. Abigail, this completely immediately breaks whatever hold this entity had on Abigail. Once her mom like simply shifts her body a little bit, Abigail's able to move. She takes a step back and loses her balance and ends up slamming into her baby bed. They probably like tripped a bit. Whoa, whoa. Probably would have been really funny to watch, but look, she slams into her baby bed. That wakes the mom up. Abigail's screaming, she's crying, she's sobbing, and the mom can't figure, what in the world, Abby, what's going on? What's going on? Just drink some water, just drink some water, that'll make the screams go away. And Abby can't really explain it. It's a paranormal event, and she's 4. It's kind of hard to put it all together, so her mom says, just go to sleep. She calms her down, you know, and says, she sings the lullaby. She's like, rock goodbye, baby, in the black hands. You're like, what? What? Mom does a jump scare. Here's the kid. This is the reason why I can't have kids, right? Because I'd constantly be tormenting them psychologically. Going like, you know, there's a black hand underneath my bed. If you happen to wake me up because you need anything, you might get choked to death by a demon from the darkness. Good night, kids. And if they were scared of something, I would 100% bring it up all the time. They hate goblins. I was like, oh, look what I bought. Look at my new D&D character. It's goblins. I got to have goblin posters everywhere to get into character. They're like, you don't even play D&D. I do now, since I found out my kids are scared of goblins. She calms her kid down, puts her back to bed. The next morning, Abigail's sleeping, and her mom wakes her up screaming. Now her mom's screaming, "Ah, Abigail, oh my God, what did you do? What did you do? Oh my God, Abigail, get up right now." And she wakes Abby up and takes her into the bathroom. And she begins to undress Abby. And throws the clothes on the ground of the bathroom. And the mom leaves to go get some new clothes. And Abby's like, "What in the world is going on? Like, did I poop my pants or something?" Like, wow, I've never heard this before. Why is my mom freaking out? And she looked, she picked up her pajamas and she was kind of looking at them. And parts of them were covered in black stains. And she said at some points, it actually looked like my pajamas had been singed. Like they had burned just a little bit. Childhood memory gone wrong. Abby doesn't know. Abby can just kind of file that away in that immediate moment. Years later, Abby and her brother, they're teenagers, and one day they're just up late talking about stuff and all sorts of stuff. And then her brother goes, Tom, I think we called him, Tom goes, "Hey, this is going to sound weird, but back when we were kids, do you remember the Black Hand?" Abby immediately realizes a couple things. One, that this story was not just a one-off thing, or it wasn't just a dream, or it wasn't just a childhood hallucination, imagination, whatever. Her brother had seen it too. Not that night, but had seen it too. She goes, "I realized immediately that this thing was real. I could have pretended it was fake this whole time, but it's real." She goes, "I also was immediately greeted with a flashback of one day she was sitting, I think she was sitting on her bed, or a bed, probably the mom's bed, but she goes, I immediately had a memory of my brother playing on the carpet, and this black hand was crawling on the carpet as well." It was like a fragment of a memory. It was something that she had never remembered, but when he said that, she remember, and it really is like a fragment. She doesn't say, "Oh, and then we ran out of the room and we hid from it." It almost seemed like a normal thing that sometimes when they are there, the black hand will show up. Like it was just this snippet in time. She realized that this was real. This is something that was actually going on in this household. If she has that flashback, they probably interacted with this hand multiple times. Now, we did a story, and we're not done with this one. We did an episode a long time ago about disembodied hands. A lot of times they can be black, they can be white, they can be green. They're usually furry. Most of the time, the ones we covered, I think all the ones we covered, it was a disembodied hand. It ended at the wrist, and it's very, very common in Mexico, and I believe even like Central America, maybe some of South America as well. But we found all of these stories of people talking about these hands chasing them around when they were kids. And some of them were on the exterior, if I remember. I think one kid got chased up the staircase outside of his home or outside of his apartment by one of these things. But I'll put that episode in the show notes. That's like a cryptid. It's like a regional cryptid. We don't know what that is. This one might give us a bit of a clue. As well, it's not the exact same phenomenon. We don't know where the story took place. The story could have taken place in Mexico or Central America. This one, though, we do have an origin story. After the conversation, once she realized that this was not something she just dreamt up one day or it was a weird memory, once her brother admitted that he saw it too, that this was a thing, she thought about it a lot and she talk to her grandma. Now, her grandma is a witch. And she said that we knew she was a witch. We knew she did this stuff. She used to, when in her heyday, in her wild youth, she used to use magic to curse people or to do spells, which is kind of what you would figure a witch would do. But she was not using it in the most appropriate ways, this raw power. Nowadays, she would use it for, like, nowadays as when Abby is talking to her grandmother much more recently after they're teenagers and all that stuff. She goes, nowadays my grandma uses it mostly for protection spells and doing card reading. And one day she's talking to her grandma and she goes, hey grandma, I know this is going to sound super weird, but you're probably one of the only people I can kind of talk to about this. And Tom saw it too. When we were kids, there was this black hand that we would sometimes see. And one time I woke up in the middle of the night and it came out from underneath mom's bed and it crawled up me and started choking me. And the grandma just goes pale. And she tells Abby, she goes, so, remember that old woman? That old neighbor woman that we always told you to stay away from? Yeah, I remember her. I believe, the grandma said, I believe that she was also a magic user. I'm almost certain of it. And I think that she placed a curse on your mom. I think the neighbor cursed your mom. And I think that is what was underneath your mother's bed. It was that old woman's curse. And it was meant for your mother. But you walked up to it first. You triggered it. Much like a landmine. A landmine is non-discriminatory who it kills or who it maims. First come, first serve. Grandma said, when you and your brother were kids, I did place protection spells on you. You guys were so precious to me. Wanted to make sure nothing terrible happened to you. Had I not done that, you would have died that night. That spell was powerful enough to kill you. The fact that it was hanging out of the house for so long as well, people have this memory of this thing, would show how powerful it was. It was a curse from that old lady on your mom, underneath her bed, her side of the bed, hoping she would step out of bed first and it could attach to her. But you came and it attached to you and it stuck around. And Abby does believe it stuck around long past the event. She said, she goes, I haven't had an easy life. I have not had an easy life. It's been full of struggle. More struggle than she feels other people go through. That's kind of a universal thing. I think a lot of people may feel like life's kicking them when they're down. But she goes, I believe that it could still be this curse. That I'm still affected by this thing. That it crawling up me and that horrible sensation of it on my skin, that was just part of it. You're right. I could have been dead if grandma's had never cast a blessing on me, a protection spell on me. But this dark magic was so powerful, it still seeped in. It wasn't going to do physical damage, but it's taken its toll in how harsh life has treated me. Which would make sense in a lot of ways. If you woke up in the middle of the night and your daughter was laying dead on the floor, and she had black stains on her pajamas, and the pajamas were a little singed, you would have no way to conceptualize that. You wouldn't even know what could happen. You'd call the police, and they'd be like, what in the world? And, you know, your kid had a heart attack. And you would just go on. It would be horrific. That would, you know, damage the family as well. But it wasn't able to do that. So instead, it stuck around. It couldn't get the kids. It couldn't kill the kids. Now, she didn't make any reference to her brother having a particularly bad life. But it does seem like she triggered it. And it does seem that it may have only been around when she was around, too. When he goes, hey, do you remember that black hand when we were young? Do you remember that? It could have been that it was always around when she was around. He may not have seen it on his own. We don't have that information. But it does sound like some sort of psychic booby trap that someone could set off. Now, what's really interesting is this was posted online by someone going by the name Ava Noodle 23. I was prepping this story. I was like, that's terrifying because that could happen to any of us. I've talked about this before, this idea of psychic landmines. These things can happen to any of us. There could be a curse placed on a location, and it's a time bomb waiting to be set off. And you go through a hike, and you veer off the trail, because you see like a cool porcupine over there wearing a little mushroom, but he pretends it's a hat. You're like, I gotta get off the trail to see the porcupine in the mushroom hat. And you don't know that some black magic ceremony was performed 30 feet off that trail. And you don't know. You just walk by it and then you see the porcupine and the mushroom falls off and you're like, oh, whatever, dude. And then you go back on the trail, but something has attached to you from there. You say that is nonsense. You go, you're like, Jason, porcupines don't wear hats, but I'll give them that. I've talked about this famously on my show a couple times, how I went to a courthouse when I was in college. One of my classes, we had to observe a trial. I went to a courthouse and I sat down in the back row, because that's where all the cool kids sit, even in court. I sat down in the back row to take notes, and I believe an entity attached itself to me. And it did cause a lot of physical pain over the next quite a few years. 5 years, 7 years, something like that. It's happened a while ago. I'll put the whole episode in the show notes. We believe that that is an entity we call the solar plexus clown glider, which is some sort of life form that attaches to you and puts you in miserable situations, in situations of no hope, and it feeds off that energy. And then one day it just fell off of me. It just went away. It wasn't attached to me every day. I never really even made a connection until I sat and looked back at my life this whole period of time, and I go, I sat in that chair in the back of the courthouse, and my back started hurting really bad. And this was in the early 2000s. So I'd been in a couple car accidents before that. I've had more than enough times where I've been knocked flat on my ass. But I went to the doctor, I go, my back. I remember very clearly waking up the next day, my back hurt, and I go, I think it's because I was sitting in that cheap plastic chair for 8 hours, and my back hurt, and it hurt again and again. And so I went to the doctor, and he prescribed me 250 Vicodin a month. And so that was all just, I mean, talk about throwing a wrench into the works. I was doped to the gills. I was on so many painkillers. And it affected me personally, it affected me professionally, it affected my creativity, and set me off course for far longer than I was on the pills. Even when I was off the pills, it was just this weird thing. But anyways, I've looked back and I go, I think that's something attached to me. We've covered other episodes about these solar plexus clown gliders. And what's interesting is, and it was literally like, if I had sat in a different seat, there's not a lot of points in my life where I can say if I had stayed with this girl or married that one, I could go, my life would be wildly different. There's very few points where I can say if I sat in this chair or that chair, my life would be wildly different. I do believe if I got there and someone else was already sitting where in the back row and I had to sit further up, a whole saga of my life never would have happened. I believe that. As I was prepping this story, I did in the back of my mind think, oh yeah, the whole psychic landmine thing, right? She happened to trigger it. And while I was doing that, I got another recommendation sent to me from The Last 747. He posted this and he titled it, Is This a Solar Plexus Clown Glider? And he talks about a man posted this story online underneath the name. Let me pull it up here. Adam Infinite, or Adam Infin. We'll call him Adam. Adam said a month ago he was trying to take a nap, and he woke up and his bathroom door was creaking open, and I saw a black mist slowly, quickly kind of manifest and float out of the bathroom across the bedroom. And it phased right through the wall behind him. Then a black hand reached out from the wall behind him and began choking him. At that point, Adam, his entire body starts to convulse. He says, if I had it, it was like as if I was having a seizure. I think he actually did have a seizure. His entire body was violently shaking. And then he was able to calm down, or more likely the seizure stopped. He goes, since then, I've been grinding my teeth a lot. Which, you know, isn't as bad as having your entire life ruined when you're four, but he goes, I've been grinding my teeth a lot. He said that, let me read this to you verbatim. I did some meditation, this quote, I did some meditations and concluded it's a sort of inner demon that gained consciousness within my own mind as I've aged and my own consciousness expanded. It's the root demon that has caused my past addictions, and I barely overcame them 3 years ago. So this is interesting because I wonder what his backstory is. Like, some people get addicted because they grow up in bad neighborhoods or boring neighborhoods, and there's nothing to do but to huff paint. Some people do drugs to escape reality because it's too horrible to comprehend. They've had horrible things happen to them. Some people do it because they're bored. And then they start to make a string of bad decisions until they're shooting Trank up in some back alley in San Francisco. Some people have a genetic predisposition for addiction. And some people have a hole inside of them they're trying to fill, and they can't figure out what it is, so they fill it full of chemicals. I think there's another option out there, people who don't really fit any of those, but step on a psychic landmine. Step onto a energy attachment. The drug problem is their problem to solve. The drug user has to solve that problem. But it is complicated because of a metaphysical entity. And I wonder if this guy, if this Adam dude, had a normal... Like, listen, here's the thing. I drank and I smoked weed. And I did all sorts of stuff. When I was in my 20s, if you put something on the table, I was most likely going in my body. Right? You're like, where'd my car keys go? Ah, I'm old. I thought it would get me high. I fit into more of that bored category. Right? You got to a party or a club and somebody has a couple pills and you just took them. You didn't know what they were. Right? Because you want to have fun that night. So, that's more where I fit. But when the doctor prescribed me these painkillers and said, this is going to make your back better, I never felt like I was mentally addicted to opioids, but I was definitely physically dependent on them. So when I would run out, which is going to happen because you end up taking more because eventually you're... I mean, I was taking more than 250 a month because it starts to lose its effectiveness, or at least you feel that way. I'd go through physical withdrawals. But I feel like if I had sat in a different seat, I never was into opioids when I was partying. I was like, what's the point of this, right? Like, what's the point of being down? I didn't understand the point of downers. I wonder if that's this guy's situation. Was he a lifelong addict? Was he using drugs to escape from things? We don't even really know what it is. He says my past addictions. It could be gambling and sex. We don't know. But an energy attachment could be that as well. These all could be interconnected. These all could be completely interconnected, this phenomenon of what it is. And one more thing, we'll wrap it up like this. I thought it was very interesting. I was looking through the export the other day and someone posted this image. And maybe I'll use it for the art. Maybe I'll use it, maybe I'll just provide a link. But it's a photo and it's basically the energy makeup and how things can attach to the human body. And it shows like parasites on the legs, spiritual parasites on the legs. There's something that's attached to this man's butthole or his butt cheeks at the very least. And then, right, and again, like the solar plexus clan gliders is something, as far as we know, that really came out of the X board. It came off conspiracy theory icebergs. That's where this phrase came from. We're all still trying to decipher exactly what this could be. I made the connection to a snake-like entity. I didn't say that earlier this episode, sorry. But when I sat down in my chair in the courtroom, because I've said this so many times on the show, I don't want to bore you guys, but when I sat down on my chair in the courtroom, I turned to my right. Not immediately, like I was watching the trial and I see movement out of the corner of my eye and I turn and I see a coiled cobra sitting on the chair next to me. I can remember it just like it was yesterday. And it moved in this very hyper animated way and kind of made a movement towards me, and I like physically flinched and then it was gone. And I didn't know what to put it, how to really process any of that. It wasn't until years later when I looked back on how drastically my life started to change that very next day when I woke up with really bad back pain, and I said it was from sitting in that courtroom chair. That was enough to get me a ton of Vicodin. For 5 years, I had a doctor's prescription for 250 pills a month. There's this drawing, I don't know where it came from, but it's showing these different attachments to the human body, and there is a snake attached to the throat. Which is interesting because both of the stories we just profiled felt themselves being choked. And then there is a snake attached to where the solar plexus is on the human body. So what are these things? This is one of those, this is like episode 69 in the 70s, like really early Dead Rabbit Radio. We started talking about snake entities and solar plexus clown gliders and how these things could attach themselves to us. And it seems like the longer we do this show and the longer we as a community are researching this stuff, we're finding more and more connections to these snake-like entities and seeing this drawing of it, because it's still very, very obscure conspiracy theory, very, very obscure paranormal topic. These do seem, other researchers are putting these together. Other people who are in the world of metaphysical knowledge and research are also realizing that there are these snake entities, and that is where they attach. And what's interesting too with these hands is that they're going for the throat. And it could be a stretch by saying a long arm's kind of like a snake, but all of this stuff could be related to each other. And if that's the case, this is where it goes from being a crazy ghost story about a little boy slipping and dying in a bathroom to an unknown entity. Everybody knows what demons are. Everybody knows what djinn are. These are things that are in movies. These are things that are in literature. People, entities, creatures, spiritual beings that we know to look out for. This is an unknown form that is feeding off the human body. And you can only find scraps of information about it spread across decades of writings and experiences. What are these things? I feel like we're just kind of stumbling into a very deep spiritual conspiracy. Some sort of life form. We don't even know what they are. Mainstream paranormal thought is not talking about these things. And I feel like we're just kind of bumbling headfirst through the darkness with our hands out. And we are slowly, possibly putting these pieces together. It's not just me, it's all of us. It's you guys, people finding this information. And that terrifies me, honestly. Like, it's fun to talk about ghosts. It's even fun to talk about demons and kind of like look at and see how they operate or tell some crazy story about some dude got possessed and killed his family, because it makes sense. We kind of know what it is, but what are these? It's the unknown that is terrifying. That is one of those things about paranormal research. The more you know about it, the less scary it becomes. It becomes metaphysically scary because you start to think, well, when I die, what is the afterlife going to be like? Will I be a ghost? You can have questions like that, but ghosts themselves aren't scary. Demon shows up, you kind of know what to do. You know, pray to God, pray to Jesus. Does that work against these things? They're not demonic. They're not biological. How do you stop them? We don't know. We don't even know how you get them in the first place. It just seems like it's luck of the draw. Or unluck of the draw. It's a terrifying entity that the longer we do the show, the more we find out about them. But the more we find out about them, the scarier they become. The more powerful we start to realize that these things, that doesn't make sense. The more powerful they become, we start to realize they may be stronger than we can even think of. And what's really weird, we'll wrap it up like this. Think about this for a second. If these things are real, and we are slowly uncovering things about them, I can bet you that there are people who know a lot about them already, and they're not revealing that information to the general public. If these things are real, if there truly is a solar plexus clown glider, these entities can attach onto humans and feed off their energy, and we're just finding like little fragments over the internet. Other people know way more than we do, and I would not be shocked if there are humans who worship these things, or have even tried communicating with them in some way, or maybe have communicated with them. If these things exist, people who walk amongst us, a small cabal, but I believe that if these things exist, there would be people around who would worship them. A hidden religion. All the stories about Hollywood elites worshiping demons, all this stuff, it's all smokescreen. The cover for the 200 people worldwide who truly worship these things. If they exist, there's more information about them out there. People have dedicated their lives to tracking these things down. They've dedicated their lives, like government tries to communicate with aliens. An interdimensional species that directly fed off humans just because they don't have fancy spaceships. Power is power. People in power want more power. If these things are real, there are powerful people communicating with these things or trying to, worshiping them like gods, and covering up all the information about these things. If these things are real, they might be one of the most terrifying things that we've covered on Dead Rabbit Radio. Because not only are we discussing an entity that directly feeds off humans, we may be exposing too much information about them. And that is something that those who do the bidding of these dark creatures will not stand for. If we are exposing these things as real when they've spent not decades, millennia covering up the existence of these, what happens as we get closer and closer and closer to finally putting all the pieces of the puzzle together? DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today.